start as soon as next year. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
In sports, Christian Yelich hit a game-winning single. Sal Frelick launched his first major league home run, and the Milwaukee Brewers beat the Cincinnati Reds 3-2 in their NL Central showdown last night. That series continues in Milwaukee tonight. Both the Cubs and Sox were off yesterday. They begin a series against each other this evening. Packers CEO Mark Murphy says it will probably take at least half a season for the team to know what it has in new starting quarterback Jordan Love. The WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service includes that air quality advisory for Canadian wildfire smoke remains in effect at least until noon today. Mostly sunny skies, otherwise a high of 88, a southwest wind at 5 to 10, becoming southeasterly in the afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 72. Tomorrow, partly sunny, continued warm, but we do have a 50% chance for some showers and storms. Tomorrow's high, 87. Right now, 75 with the wind out of the west at 6 miles per hour. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The morning show is next.
Welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to have a full hour today, I promise you, because we are talking about the amazing work done by the United Way, and very specifically, the United Way of Kenosha County. And I'm very excited to welcome into our studios today Carolyn Frisch, who is Executive Director of the United Way of Kenosha County. She's been in that post for 2 years, and together we're going to be talking about the many and various ways in which the United Way impacts the lives of so many people, young and old, in Kenosha County. And of course, not just here, but of course, United Way is a vital presence in American society all across the country, and they've been around a long time. As a matter of fact, the United Way of Kenosha County is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. So this is a well-timed visit indeed. And Carolyn Frisch, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. I'm so excited to be here. It is such an honor and a pleasure to be here. And thank you for providing me with the opportunity to speak about this lovely organization that's been doing impactful work in our community for 100 years now.
I think that's just great. So happy anniversary to you and yours. Before we talk about United Way, let's just find out a little bit more about you. First of all, are you from this area originally, or where are you from originally?
That's a great question. So I grew up in southeastern Wisconsin. I grew up in Milwaukee, actually. Lived in Milwaukee all of my life. What is crucial, I think, and integral to my story to becoming the executive director at United Way of Kenosha County is I was born and raised by a single mom. My parents were married for a few years, but a majority of my life, my mother raised me. She worked multiple jobs, two or three jobs, to keep a roof over our head and living paycheck to paycheck. So that is what kind of put me on the path of being in this work. I was very fortunate enough to go to Marquette University. I got my bachelor's in political science from Marquette through their educational opportunity program, which put me on the path to be able to do what I do today. So it's absolutely lovely.
Fantastic. So tell us what the last 2 years have been like in terms of taking over United Way of Kenosha County. And I should think something like that, just because by its very nature, it does so many different things. I'm thinking you had quite a steep learning curve to learn it all.
Yeah, you definitely, it kind of almost took the words right out of my mouth. It was it was very busy. I came to United Way directly from Carthage College, working in their development office, there was a lot of things I had to learn about, particularly the financial piece for me. But one of the things I think that helped me in the role get quickly established, one was I had a great group of board of directors that was able to guide me and aid me, particularly our board president at the time, Nick Smith, as well as Sherry Westhoff, who had been with the organization 19 years. But then also, I'm a board member, too, on different boards. So I've seen financial statements, been accustomed to that, and in my prior role at Carthage, doing corporate relations and foundation relations, had seen those pieces, 990s and things of that nature. So, I think it took me about 18 months or so to really get in a groove, so to speak, to really understand kind of like the cyclical nature of the work and then be able to bring on new things as we are changing and trying to meet the moment in terms of what life is like in 2023.
Right. And what the needs of people are.
Correct.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Very good. It might be good for us, before we delve into some of the very specific things going on with Kenosha County, to talk about United Way in general on more of a kind of a national scale. So tell us what you can about the overall organization and maybe along the way then also kind of help explain the relationship of, for instance, the United Way of Kenosha County to this overarching organization?
Yeah, so I would say, so United Way worldwide is, in essence, it is worldwide. There are over 1,600 United Ways across the world. Primarily, most of them are in the United States. Each United Way is its own 501c3, so we are run by an independent, locally run board of directors. Everybody that works for the organization is local. We either most of us live in Kenosha or in Racine. And then with United Way Worldwide, what is great is we have the opportunity to be able to tap into our network to learn about best practices, things that are going on. We are all working kind of towards the same mission, in a sense, in terms of bringing the community together to advance work in education, financial well-being, and health for our different constituencies. And it looks different in different areas, though. So for Chicago, obviously a big metropolitan area, what is working there? We might be able to bring to another local United Way that's smaller, albeit it's going to look different. So that's one thing I really like about the network that I feel enables us to do better work for our community, is because we can bring those ideas to the table that are happening in peer communities or aspirational communities, and then be able to look at it, assess it, and figure out, okay, is this something that we'd like in our community? And if so, how would we be able to implement it to create the change that we want to see for our residents?
That does seem like a great way to have that put together, so it isn't overly prescriptive that every chapter of United Way is functioning the same way or, in a sense, trying to do the same thing. I mean, in a very, very general way, you're all trying to do the same thing, but that's going to look different in different places, in different settings.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. And, there are some things that are similar, I think, for most United Ways, though. We all do some form of granting. So we because that's the core essence of our work, right? When we started back in 1923, we were the Community Chess Association of Kenosha. And that was all about giving money out to nonprofits in the area that needed that support. And then 50 years later, we became the United Way of Kenosha County in 1973. And since, continue to raise funds on behalf of nonprofit organizations in our community. But what has changed is we also run our own programs that support those core focus areas that I talked about earlier of education, financial well-being, and health.
Wonderful. Absolutely. How big a staff do you have?
Yeah, great question. So we have four full-time employees. We have several contract employees, but we primarily run on volunteers. Volunteers are what make our programs run. They're what make them impactful. And so we're very grateful to the hundreds of volunteers that help our organization every single year.
Fantastic. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today with Carolyn Frisch, who is the executive director of the United Way of Kenosha County. And as previously mentioned, they are celebrating their 100th anniversary this year. Carolyn, it was fun to have you remind me about that old term community chest. For a lot of people, that's just a space on the Monopoly board, the game board. And but that was once upon a time a commonly held concept, and what a beautiful picture it is. And in a lot of ways, you're still remaining true to that. It's this chest for the community, and deserving organizations can, in a sense, reach into that chest and get the funds that they need to do the good work that they want to do.
Correct. Yes. And, you know, every year we provide grant funds for, you know, I'd say 15 to 20 organizations. It really depends on how much funds we have applicable. In the last granting season, which was 21-22, we had 14 nonprofit partners and 18 programs within those 14 nonprofit partners that we were able to assist.
Fantastic. Maybe tell us just a little bit about what that process involves and what sort of a gauntlet it is. I mean, we kind of hear horror stories sometimes about how that process can be daunting and intimidating, and with good reason too, because you don't want to be sloppy in terms of who you give money to. So it should be an exacting process. Describe, at least in general, how this works.
Yeah, definitely. So as someone who writes grants as well for a living, I totally understand what you're saying. And I think that, you know, we definitely try to take that into account. And we want to give out this money. We're excited to give out this money. We're excited to get to do that support. But generally, the process itself for the grantees starts in February. That's typically when we announce the open RFP for the program, and then we give them about 4 weeks to complete the online application with subsequent support. I have to mention our senior director of community impact operations, Javon Clausen. She's been instrumental in kind of making some changes to that process, adding additional questions that help us to get at the heart of what we're trying to accomplish in terms of our mission and what we're trying to do here in Kenosha County. But I would say once the writing process is complete, then our volunteers get to work. So we have a community impact committee that is run by Cindine Jennings, who works at Gateway Technical College. But we've got about 15 people on that committee who review the applications, score them, and then we put the results in front of our board, who approve them, and we get right back to work with our grantees. But things that we're kind of looking for, I guess would probably be good to share and touch on. We're looking to make sure that the program that they're asking the money for is clearly defined. So, you know, what are the services being offered? How does it target and assist low-income residents? What's their criteria for determining low income, and there's other kind of key pieces that we're looking at, but particularly do the outcomes that the organization's wishing to get to with that program, do they align with our initiatives, which are education, financial well-being, health and basic needs, basically. So
we had a conversation on the morning show not too long ago about grant writing and grant dispensing, or whatever the more proper term is. And one of the points that came up in that conversation, made not by me but by the guest, was something to the effect that this process is often helpful for the organizations, not just in terms of whether or not they get funding, but it can be a very helpful learning experience for them, and maybe particularly for an organization that is just launching, just getting off the ground, or maybe another organization that is maybe reevaluating the services it is delivering to the community and whether or not they need to maybe realign or redirect what they're doing. And this grant proposal, grant writing process can be really helpful for the organization to just, in a sense, solidify their own identity, which I'd never stopped to think about.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point, and something that I've heard in the last couple of weeks by program managers and executive directors that we're talking to right now is that what they really appreciate about our process in particular is that we provide feedback. And I know, as somebody who has written many grants over my career, that doesn't always happen. Okay.
Well, sometimes you just get a no.
Yeah, you just get an email one day and no, and it's always good to follow up and ask for feedback. So I always do that and always encourage that. But you know, depending upon the number of applications that a grantor gets, they just don't have the capacity to do that. But for us, it's really built into the process that we're able to provide that feedback, because one, we want to make sure that our community investment partners, that they get stronger. Okay, that they get stronger in this process. So we want to be able to provide them feedback. So when they go out and they're asking for money from other grantees or donors, for example, that they, you know, can continue to tighten up their reasoning, their wordsmithing, whatever it might be, in order to just make that stronger for them. I think that's very important. Plus, we want to be, as an organization, we want to be there for our community partners in terms of supporting them and supporting their efforts. So that's just kind of an extension of that work.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today with Carolyn Frisch, Executive Director of the United Way of Kenosha County, celebrating 100 years of making a difference in the community. We're going to focus for the next few minutes on some of the very specific things that United Way of Kenosha County has been engaged in. And one of the things I'm most interested to ask you about is this piece under the umbrella or whatever of financial stability, that you are not only trying to give people, I mean, very tangible help in terms of just getting by, getting their bills paid or whatever it might be, but also maybe gaining some greater financial stability and maybe an better understanding of how finances work and so on. And one piece of that is free income tax assistance that you will give to people. So first of all, tell us a little more about this program itself, when it was implemented, and what kind of a need it was trying to address.
Yeah, I love this program. This is one of our most successful programs that we run. So the VITA Tax Service actually started in the mid-90s with professors at Carthage College and UW-Parkside. Huh. Yes, yeah. So I got to give a shout-out to Julie Dawson. She's a accounting professor there, and she was one of the professors that was instrumental in getting the program started. And it quickly grew steam, was very popular program in the area, mostly college students who were doing taxes for individuals. And then about, I'd say, 10 years or probably even more, maybe 15 years into it, they approached United Way of Kenosha County asking if the executive director at the time would be willing to take over the program, because it was growing so much and it was very needed. So we've since had it at that time, and we've been tracking our information. We know that annually with a hearty group of volunteers, we serve anywhere between 800 and 1,000 clients every year. Yep. And in terms of tax refunds that we bring back, it's generally in the range of about $1.6 million. So, you know, that money goes right back into the pockets, into the savings accounts of individuals that need it most. Our qualification measures for that, we're looking at individuals who are making $58,000 a year or less. And that's a good portion of our population in Kenosha County. A lot of people are taking a part in the service and have been doing it for many years. And then an integral piece to that service is the financial education component. So unfortunately, due to the pandemic, we had to kind of go away with that for a little bit, you know, lots of social distancing and that kind of thing at the time. But we've been able to start to come back back. I have those conversations, particularly with financial institutions in our area, to get them in and have some time with individuals at the various sessions. Hmm. We run four sites across Kenosha County. So there's our largest and most used one is the Job Center located on Sheridan Road. Hmm. That one is always heavily trafficked. We also have two sites at Kenosha Libraries, one on the north side, one at the southwest side, and then out in the county in Bristol on Highway 50. We do a lot of collaboration on this project with Kenosha County and the Kenosha Public Library. But also, one thing that was great and new last year in terms of talking about community need and how we can leverage our community partners, we were able to connect with four of our community investment partners and have pop-up sites at those places. Because we wanted to see, you know, if there, one, was there a need there, which we assumed probably would be the case, but also we want to try to be able to get in some of those neighborhoods and better connect with those individuals. So we appreciate those nonprofit executive directors opening their doors to our staff and our volunteers to be able to do additional tax refunds, tax planning, stuff like that for them. So
tell us more about this small army of volunteers, I mean, that are, of course, absolutely essential to this. In general, I mean, where do they come from? What kind of background do they have? I mean, and what should somebody's, what sort of natural experience do people need to have or gifts in order to be effective in this particular role?
I think the natural gift that you need to have is just a love for your community, quite frankly. Anybody can do this role. I know a lot of times people think, oh, you have to have an accounting background or be a mathematician or, you know, whatever. But that's not the case. You know, we are doing tax refunds, very simple tax returns for individuals. And we also have different ways in which people can plug in to be a volunteer. So someone may start out on the front end welcoming people and then and helping to get all of their materials. There's a little checklist that we have. So do you have a copy of their ID and all that kind of other stuff, right? W-9 and things of that nature. And then we have a good, strong group of people that actually do the taxes. They're all processed online. It's very user-friendly. And we do – so backtrack one quick second. In January is when we do the training. So we utilize our friends and partners at the Internal Revenue Service, so the IRS, helps to provide virtual training for everyone. And then in order to be a volunteer, you have to be certified at – one of these levels to be able to do the tax preparation service or even help out at the front end. So that's another thing that's great about the program for clientele, knowing that every single volunteer that they touch is somebody that's been trained by the IRS with assistance from the United Way of Kenosha County. They're ready to go. And we have several volunteers that do come back year after year. We have one volunteer that has been with the program since the days of Julie Dawson and Carthage College, and she still continues to come back, and we really appreciate and value her and her experience.
Wow. For instance, this past tax season, did you have enough volunteers to service everybody who wanted this assistance?
I unfortunately have to say no, we did not. I mean, we were able to get through the season. We had about 35 volunteers, but quite frankly, you know, we could probably double that and still be able to not get to everybody that we want. Usually, we have all the appointments booked up by about mid-March, but if we could add even another 10 to 15 volunteers, that could help out even more. So
that I suppose one of the realities of somebody living within limited means is that they very likely will not have a laptop at home and other resources that a lot of the rest of us completely take for granted. So when it comes to kind of seeking out assistance, their options might be really severely limited. And for somebody like this, this is a lifeline.
Oh, it is, quite frankly, yeah. And you know, if they were to go to a for-profit business that specializes in tax preparation, on average, they're going to pay between $200 to $300. So we're saving them that money and ensuring that, you know, all of the income credits that they can get, the tax, full tax refund that they can get, goes right back into their pocket at no cost, you know, to them, which I think is great, especially when the constituency that we're trying to assist here, you know, really needs every dollar that they can to pay for the essentials that they need in their life.
Right. So I assume as you proceed through the rest of the year, one of your clarion calls will be for more people to consider becoming a volunteer in this very, very much needed program.
Yes, yes, yes. And I can tell you now, if you are interested, please give us a call. I can tell you our number is 262-658-4104 if you're interested. Or our information's on the website. You can always email me, and I'd get to happily to direct you to them. We definitely would love your help.
We're speaking with Carolyn Frisch about the United Way of Kenosha County, which is deep in its 100th anniversary. Another really important piece of what United Way does involves education and making a difference in terms of, for instance, literacy. And as I explored your wonderful and colorful website yesterday, one of the first things that popped up was this terrific thing called the Imagination Library. And this is something which apparently is a relatively new addition to the mix in terms of United Way of Kenosha County. So first of all, for any of our listeners who have not ever heard of this, tell them when this was created and by whom.
Yeah, so this was created by none other than celebrity Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton has a love for literacy, for reading. She started in her hometown in Tennessee and then quickly grew across the nation. And basically what we're able to do is we're able to provide free books to young children ages 0 to 5. They get one book every month once they're parent or our caregiver enrolls them, and they get a book every month until they turn age 5, and it's absolutely great. You know, I as a parent, I have a 7-year-old daughter, so I know when I go to the store, a hardcover book for a young child can cost $10, $15, $17, $20 or more. If you're on a fixed income, that can take time. It takes money out of your pocket, right? But we all know that literacy is so important, especially getting children accustomed to reading at such a young age, or at least getting them excited about books and learning sight words and things of that nature. So through the Imagination Library, we're able to provide these age-appropriate books to young children. And right now, we are in six zip codes in Western Kenosha County. That's typically how you want to start the program. So basically what we did on the front end before I even got here, my predecessor was able to fundraise several thousands of dollars to be able to then launch the program, which we did in October of 2021. So we're very excited. We got about 600 kids involved in the program right now, a couple of graduates since we've launched the program too, as well. And children, you know, if they go and they go to our website, see the zip codes that are on there, and if their child resides in that area, sign them up. You know, if they're 3 or 4 years old, this is a great time to do that. Or if they're just about to be born, that would be great too. So,
I should think that this is, I mean, there's, first of all, there's something wonderful about going to the library and checking out a book, but sometimes that is not the easiest thing, and especially when we're talking about Western Kenosha County and where people might live, that they might be in fairly remote locations where that's not a simple matter. But also just the thing about owning a library book, it is yours. It is on your shelf at home. That's really special.
Oh, yeah.
And particularly in a household where funds are limited, that is something that might not be possible, or certainly not to this scale.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. We're saving money for families. We're ensuring that children have the necessary access to books. And it's exciting. I know, like, the book comes with the child's name on it. So they see it. It's right directly to them. And, you know, with my daughter, when we launched, we live in Racine County. We were able to take advantage of it there. And she would get excited. I'd say, Dolly sent you another book. And she would just be super excited about that. So, you know, she's continued that love of literacy and reading, and I think that started with that program. So
great. So is this a program that you are hoping to expand from where it is right now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in terms of, you know, our annual community fundraising that we do, yes, we want to make sure that, you know, we continue to grow sponsorship dollars and community funds in order to grow that program eventually across the entire county would be fabulous.
Fantastic. I know that under also the auspices of your education purpose, that there is something called Readers Are Leaders, a tutoring program that I know you're excited about. Tell our listeners about it.
I'm very excited about Readers Are Leaders. I myself have been a literacy tutor before, and as a tutor, just the one-on-one with the children is absolutely phenomenal. Developing those relationships, seeing their abilities be able to expand over time and their excitement about reading continue to expand is absolutely phenomenal. So this program was been around for about a decade now. We've been in schools primarily in the Kenosha Unified School District. So thank you to our partners there that allow us to be able to do that. And last year, we were in 5 schools and helped about 60, we had 60 tutors and about 100 kids. So that were children that were in the program. So we focus in on, so how it works is basically not only is it one-on-one tutor, but most specifically, we're focusing on children who are in kindergarten through third grade because as most people, your listeners may know, you know, third grade is that essential time where they start to change from learning how to read to reading to learn content. Okay, so we want to make sure that those kindergarten, first, second, third graders are reading at a proficiency level that will allow them to, as easily as possible, transition in learning reading content to be able to learn things. One of the things that's going on in our community right now, and we're not an outlier on this, is, you know, we've been affected, unfortunately, with the pandemic. We have low literacy rates in our community. About 32% of third graders in our community countywide are reading at grade level. So that leaves us with, you know, over 60% of students that are not. And I know that there are other, what's great about our community is there are other ways in which people can get their children involved in literacy programs that partner with the school district, partner with teachers and things of that nature. And so we're one of those key parts to be able to start to chip away and ensure that more students are reading at grade level at third grade.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is a statistic that's on your website that when we want to chart or at least roughly predict which students are going to ultimately succeed, I mean, be in school through graduation and so on, a lot rides on where they are in proficiency when they get to third grade. And so this is probably something where people who have an interest in this, a concern for this, and particularly at this moment in time when we are still kind of recovering from the consequences of COVID specifically, which seems to be driving this particular situation, what a great opportunity for people to step in and be a part of the solution.
Yeah, yes, 100%. This is another great call out for volunteers potentially. You know, as I mentioned just a few moments ago, about 60 volunteers and our volunteers come in, they come into a school like Brass Community School, for example, and meet with a student for 30 minutes a week. That's kind of the commitment that we're looking at. Some tutors have a little bit more flexibility, might meet with 2 students, so they're there for an hour. But if there's any way that people can, you know, kind of get away from their work day over a lunch hour, or if they're a retiree and have some additional time on their hands, we would love to include them in our upcoming Readers Are Leaders academic year. We actually just were meeting with Kenosha Unified School District personnel and talking about next year, kind of looking at a timeline of, you know, we're starting to recruit now. We'll be heavily recruiting in August and September and hope to relaunch the program again for for another school year in November. Mm-hmm. So it usually runs from November through May. And what's great is, this is one of the things that I really love about it, great program, but at the end of the year, we always do a celebration. And so we bring the kids, all the children together with the volunteers at each one of the schools. We do a celebration, usually involves some cake and candy and food and acknowledgement of what they've done. And the children are able to talk about their favorite book, their favorite character, their favorite experiences that they had with the volunteer and vice versa. The volunteers often share. So it's very heartwarming. And then one of the things that we've been able to add within the last 2 years is that every child at the end is getting a backpack filled with additional books that they could have over the summer and supplies and things of that nature to try to extend out the learning beyond their time in the classroom and their time with their tutor. Mm.
Yes, because you don't want them losing too much ground during the summer.
Yep.
Good point. Great. So financial stability, education. I believe the third facet of what you do involves health.
Yes, that is correct.
And just give us some sense of what Kenosha County United Way is doing in that area.
Yeah, and it's really, I think it's a combination of health and basic needs. So we provide, us personally provide two services. We provide single care, which is open for everybody. Single care is a discount prescription drug program. You can go on our website, you can download a copy of the card, you can get the information to be able to order prescriptions, and it provides an additional savings for people. Once again, kind of going back to that financial stability piece, right? And then lastly, the other piece, which I think is crucial to our work as well, is 211. So for those of you that might not be familiar with that, 211 is basically kind of like 911. It's accessible by phone 24/7, 365 days a year. People can call and get access to information on local resources, which is very, very important. So we do those two things in tandem. And then additionally, with our funded partners through the Community Investment Program, we're able to tackle education, financial stability, and health in
Very
our community.
Good. Mm-hmm. I want to give you a chance to explain to our listeners the acronym ALICE, the name, A-L-I-C-E. Explain that acronym, and then that ties us into a really important facet of what you do that we really haven't covered yet.
Yeah. So ALICE stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. So ALICE is a term that was coined by the United Way of New Jersey several years ago and picked up steam pretty quickly and came across the country. ALICE is basically a term and a concept and a data reporting structure for communities that's used in 26 states across the nation, Wisconsin being one of them. And so for United Way of Kenosha County, we're able to leverage that assistance, that data assistance, to be able to learn more about what is happening with individuals that are living paycheck to paycheck in our community. Where are, some of the issues that they might be coming up against? And it just kind of confirms a lot of what we hear across in terms of national news when you think of, the cost of goods outpacing wages, inflation and things of that nature. And so how is that affecting people? So usually I like to use that data, one, to help inform our partners and our donors, but also elected officials in terms of, their thoughts on what's going on the ground. It's an additional way to be able to help inform people about what's happening here locally and think about how we might be able to help the most vulnerable individuals in our community.
I guess this would be maybe a more sophisticated way and maybe more sensitive way of addressing the needs of what are sometimes called the working poor.
Yes, that is correct.
So these are people who are employed, who have a job, who maybe like your mom mm-hmm. Years ago had multiple jobs. Yeah. Just to stay afloat, mm-hmm. and I think for those blessed to be not in that situation, they often don't realize how difficult that can be to keep all of the balls in the air, especially if one is a parent. But even if you're not, I mean, it is having a job, having a paycheck, that is not a magic pill that makes all of these issues go away. And in some respects, These can be people that get forgotten or fall through the cracks if we're not careful.
Correct. Yeah, most definitely. And I would just add that, oftentimes we look at individuals that are below the federal poverty level because we do have a lot of data there, right? Individuals are part of different programs. Kind of going back to my own childhood, I remember very early on we were on food stamps. And then we made that transition when my mother had full-time employment and was working, also working part-time at two or three different places. And it was difficult. It was very difficult because you had food that maybe we were able to access and programs we were able to participate in. But once we reached a certain threshold in terms of an income, we no longer had the possibility of being able to be a part of that. Okay. And so it made things even tighter. Right. Because now we had the money we were able to make, but we weren't able to be able to take part in some of those programs. And that's where this data be able to share that and show that and leverage that and let people know that, yes, it isn't a magic pill. As you said, once you have a full time job, you still are going to be struggling.
So very specifically, then, how does, for instance, United Way of Kenosha County utilize that data? Or is it that you gather it for others to utilize? Is this data specifically helpful to you and the choices you make, or is it more that you are a facilitator that shares that data with organizations out in the community? Or maybe it's both.
It's a both and, because I my background a little bit, I had a degree in political science. So for me, advocacy is something that's not a new term. And so I think that it's really important to be able to inform our community leaders and individuals, our policymakers and things of that nature. So I think that's one of the ways in which I like to utilize the data. But also it informs us, too, is like, OK, so as we're thinking about our own strategic plan, which we're actually going through a strategic planning process right now, is how can that data help inform where we need to continue to lean in on our programming? What other things that we want to look at potentially now or in the future to be able to particularly help that constituency out?
Very good. So you are doing all of this and more, potentially even more. Once you kind of sort through your strategic plan in terms of moving forward, is that what part of this is about in terms of deciding where do we go from here, or do we just hang on tight and keep doing what we're doing?
I think, one is, for me, it is a cohesive message, being able to build that for the community so that the community has a very good understanding of the direction in which we're going. And that's just, I think, right now for the next probably 2 to 3 years. But also behind the scenes, thinking about where are we heading next? Where is the community heading next? We have a lot of new leaders in our community. We're going to be getting a new mayor in the city and things of that nature. So as we connect with those new leaders and understand where they're going, we look at the data, we see where the need lies, and we're able to continue to raise the necessary resources to continue the great programming that we already have, but see what else might be out there and continue to support our community investment partners. It's a lot. It's a lot. So I think, we just need to make sure that we are solid in what we're doing right now, and then continue to work on figuring out what this looks like in the next few years. So
wonderful. So let's talk a little bit about how you have already celebrated this 100th anniversary. You were telling me before we went on the air about a special event that happened on April 1st of all days. Tell us what happened on that day.
Yeah, April 1st. April Fool's Day, right? This is a great, great, fabulous day. So we actually started, this was an idea that started right when I first got to United Way in 2021. I looked at the website, reading the materials, and I'm like, man, we've got a 100th anniversary. We've got a plan. And we also need to have a day that honors our longstanding legacy of volunteerism in the community. So I was able to partner with Leadership Kenosha, and thanks to the good people there, we were selected to have a team of five volunteers that assisted with the planning and implementation of that day that you said, which we called 100 Years, 100 Volunteers, a Day of Service. Through there, with the assistance of the Leadership Kenosha team, we were able to identify 13 nonprofit partners, most of which were our community investment partners, and they were sites where volunteers, teams of volunteers, went to complete various projects. So it was great. We had a little celebration at KTAC in the city, and after the celebration, and we gave out volunteer awards to our various partners. We had our Volunteer of the Year Award. We gave that to Khalil Griffin, who works for the Kenosha Public Library. He's a wonderful volunteer for United Way and many other organizations in our community. But on top of giving out those awards, then we fanned this group of 150 people out across Kenosha County and completed service projects at various agencies like the Boys and Girls Club, ELCA Outreach Center, Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services, Inc. I mean, there were 13 of them, so I won't go into too detail. Yeah. But it was great. It was just a heartwarming day. It was very cold that day, so there was a little bit of like kind of snow sleet, unfortunately, for some of those outdoor projects. But all in all, by and large, a fabulous day, lots of pictures, lots of excitement, and it was great to be able to get people back together in that. We hadn't done that in a couple of years, and it was great to be able to do that. So we're hoping to do that again next year in a little bit, albeit warmer weather, but we would love to get another 150, maybe 200 volunteers out there at different sites in our community doing that same great work.
Fantastic. I didn't really, a couple of times the nasty word COVID has come up in our conversation, and I didn't really stop to think about it. And of course, you weren't, I don't think, with United Way at that point, but I'm sure that that was not an easy period for United Way and for organizations like it to try and continue to do their good work, but probably finding themselves logistically very much constrained.
Oh, yeah. There was very much a shift in programming. I mean, how programming had to be implemented, because you did want to continue with that. I know, for example, our VITA program shifted greatly. We used to have clients come into the different service areas. They would bring their materials, and they would sit there for two, 3 hours waiting for their tax refunds to be completed. Now, once things happen in 2020, they change that. So now the model is that they come with all their paperwork, they sit down with an intake person, go through everything, and then we give them a date to come back in 2 weeks to be able to pick up their taxes. We still do that because actually it's much more efficient. It's easier for everybody involved. And so there are some things that came out of the pandemic, as we all know, that really were beneficial. But it at the time, back in 2020, were sharp, steep learning curves and lots of about facing on programs and things of that nature. Our first in-person volunteer event when I got there, so it came in May of 2021. There was nothing in 2020, obviously. So our first big event was the Born Learning Trail. We got about 25 to 30 volunteers out there to be able to do that in person, outdoors, thinking about still about social distancing and all those kinds of measures. So yeah, it was a challenge, but we're able to continue to come back even stronger.
I meant to ask you about the Born Learning Trails at Columbus Park, and that's a trail where one can not only be just hiking and getting exercise, but also kind of learning things along the way. And it's a wonderful idea, one of a whole array of wonderful ideas implemented by United Way. As we close, I want to give you a chance to talk about a red letter day that I know is on your calendar, and that is the 11th of November. A little far off, but we should still talk about it. What's going to happen on November 11th?
Yeah, great. Thank you so much, Greg. I really appreciate it. So the Centennial Jubilee, A Night to Celebrate, is going to be a fantastic evening. We're going to be at Carthage College celebrating 100 years of United Way. So we're bringing people together. We're having a black tie affair. So people can, I think it's good to get it out there now, Greg, because people can start getting ready, getting their outfits ready. I still haven't picked out a dress dress yet. I've looked at many dresses and need to get that dress picked out very soon. But we've been planning. We've got, talk about volunteers again, 14-member planning committee helping us to get this off the ground. We're looking to have about 325 people there. We're going to be giving out some awards. We're going to have some great music there, some live music. We're going to have a DJ. We're going to have great food and just have a great time celebrating 100 years of positive impact in our community and beyond. And I'm hoping to be able to also, you know, use that time to be able to kind of cast a vision of, you know, where we see ourselves in the next few years as well, too. So it'll be a very exciting evening for everybody involved.
Fantastic. So if people want more information about anything at all that we have talked about today, I imagine you would direct them to your website.
Yes, 100%. So our website is www.KenoshaUnitedWay.org. That's the best place to find information on any of our programming, how to get involved, our volunteer opportunities that are there. Then also, we love to have people follow us on our social media. So we're on all the major platforms. We recently launched a TikTok account. So... Huh? We're very excited about that and getting into more videography for our work and being able to share out our story, our impact, the great works of our partners, our volunteers, and much more.
Fantastic. Carolyn Frisch, Executive Director of the United Way of Kenosha County. It's been wonderful to talk with you about all of the great things going on with United Way. And I trust that a lot of people listening are going to be greatly intrigued and impressed and perhaps moved to come and be a part of all of the good things happening at United Way. Thank you for coming and for telling the story of United Way so very effectively today.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for the opportunity.
We're approaching 9 o'clock, and tomorrow on the morning show, I'm going to be speaking with J. Randy Tarabarelli, a best-selling author many times over. And actually, this is the fifth